Good morning, everybody. Is everybody awake? 8 o'clock. Everybody have a good night last night. You're here. Thank you for showing up at 8 o'clock on Thursday morning. A couple things before we go on. My name is Bill Daly. I'm with the University of Texas at Arlington. I'm here to convene the session and make sure everybody in here stays under control while this happens. So I don't want anybody acting up in here. First, can everybody hear me back there with the microphones? He's going to have one. Bruce, and we've got one here. Can everybody hear okay back there? Thumbs up. Okay, it's audience participation. Thank you. Second, make sure that online on the EDUCOS homepage, the 2010, there's the online evaluations. Make sure you can go in and do the evaluations of the sessions. My understanding is it'll be up for a couple of weeks, so you don't have to rush and do it right after this is over, but please make sure you do that to provide the feedback on the sessions. So without further ado, we'll get it moving. We've got Joseph Fawn, who's with Harvey Mudd University, and we've got Nancy and Linda from, and I can't remember your consulting firm. Angelo and Garnett's Consulting. And we'd like to welcome them this morning. Please join me in welcoming them this morning.
Thank you, Bill.
So just so you know, I'm Linda, and this is Nancy, and obviously that's Joseph. So we just wanted to take one moment as a way to get started, just to find out a quick picture of your own experiences in either leading or being part of organizational change. So I'll just take a moment. We wondered how many of you in the audience have actually originated a change effort, have been the one who really got it started in your organization. Could you raise your hands? Just if people can't see, it's almost a half, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many people have actually been asked to lead an organizational change that you didn't originate? Okay. I'd say, what do you think, about a
About a third
of the group. Yeah. And here's the final one. How many of you have had a change enacted upon you? Okay, so that's a ubiquitous experience. All right. So just have the picture. It sounds like some of you really have had both that experience of leading and originating, and we'll be talking from that side. But we'll also talk about what it means to be part of the people that have it enacted to. And with that, we'll let Joseph get us started.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking the time, and hope we can give you something valuable. I have two solutions to my nervousness when I'm doing presenting. One is to get tied down so I don't pace to the back of the room. And the other, I discovered this morning, another value of Facebook I put on my Facebook that I was pretty nervous, and Baron Korolewski said, I'll be in the audience and I'll be making faces if you need me to. So he's right back there. If you see a guy making faces, you know why. So the purpose of this session is to talk a little bit about shifting an organization into a more client-centered approach. And we've been doing that at Harvey Mudd over the last year and a half in conjunction with Linda and Nancy, who are Angelo and Garnett's consulting. They're going to help explain the model we're using, and I'm going to try and give you a flavor of the lived experience at Harvey Mudd. It's hard to do in this brief time, so we are going to upload a much longer presentation with sample slides and things like that. And here are some of the questions we think you might be asking, and we're hoping to cover and give some hint of answers to these. You need to know who we are and what kinds of change I'm talking about. Someone asked me earlier, is it about IT? It's not particularly about IT, although it's the IT shop, if you like, that we're talking about. And at the end, we have some lessons and advice that we've picked up along the way. Can you all hear me okay? Okay. So one of the things about Harvey Mudd is we deal with the Harvey who question, and sometimes vendors leave messages on my voicemail saying, hi, Harvey. And there's various explanations for this, but we are young. We were founded in 1955. We're tiny. There's our numbers. So we're very specialized. We have what I think of as a really beautiful mission, which is to educate engineers and scientists and mathematicians who are well-versed in the humanities and social sciences so that they understand their impact on the world. It's lots of people at the college can actually recite this mission statement for you, and they really take it seriously. And lately we've been talking about this, Harvey Mudd, the most amazing college you've never heard of. And I have a whole website dedicated to proving we're amazing, but I'm just going to give you one nugget of evidence this morning. So we have about 5,500 alumni, many of you have entering classes that are 5,500 students. Among those alumni, we count not one, but two astronauts. We have the co-writer of the MIME standard, the co-author of SQL, the inventor of Flash, the inventor of remote procedure calls, and recently discovered the inventor of Audacity, the audio program. So I think that's an interesting piece of evidence for the claim that it's a pretty amazing place. And speaking of amazing, let me ask Linda and Nancy to introduce themselves.
Well, I bet you're wondering why nice women like us are doing in a place like this, so I thought we'd let you know. Nancy and I are organizational consultants, and what we really do is provide change management and change leadership and organizational development to groups across the public, the private, and the public sector. And we really try to help people grapple with the major challenges that are coming up in different aspects of change, ones you might have conceived and ones that might be coming at you. And we provide both consultation and training opportunities, as you see here, so that we do a lot of consultation that you'll hear more about the model, but that focuses on helping people in strategic change, in developing their leadership, in helping them align the various people in their stakeholder, external and internal groups, in collaboration and accountability. And we also do a lot of different kinds of opportunities for learning at different levels along the organizational scale that deals with leading change, developing high-performance work groups, developing change hardiness or resilience in your group so they can manage change, issues around meeting and retreat facilitation. And I just want to take a moment to explain why we chose the tagline of handcrafted strategies for realizing organizational change. And that's because what we found is every organization is different. And if you just come with the same tool or the same approach, you may really miss a lot, and because one size doesn't fit all. So our approach is one which is much more a responsive approach, where we'll do initially an assessment to figure out in a comprehensive way what your needs are, what your interests are, what's unique to that organization. And in our experience, and I think you'll hear some of Joseph talk about this, that the leaders who have the experience of understanding the complexity of their organization from the perspective of all these key individuals and groups really find that it helps move things along much more smoothly with much more effectiveness and much more targeted efforts. The last thing is that we take a systems approach, which means that we'll try to think strategically and tactically with you in how you want to design or structure or manage your organization as you're trying to create a good fit between what you are looking for and what you're trying to fulfill as your core goal. So we'll really take the realm from going from the big picture all the way down to the micro level. And finally, we see ourselves as trusted advisors, not a pair of hands, so we won't do the work, but we really hope that we can partner with you in that effort. And I think when you hear Joseph describe what happened, I think you'll see how that our custom approach worked for him. So thanks.
Thanks, Linda. So I had an impetus for change, and let's just go over some of the issues there. Harvey Mudd acquired a new president, Maria Clave, in 2006. She's a driving force for change. They, soon after she arrived, before my time, they developed a set of strategic vision principles, six of them. An IT review was conducted in 2007 with the CIOs of UBC and Carnegie Mellon came in. And in 2008, I came basically with the mandate to bring change and to make IT functional and reliable, with a particular focus on the central IT organization. Please don't laugh. We are small, but we do have the central decentralized issue, even at a place as small as Harvey Mudd. It didn't take me long to realize that CIS, which is the central IT organization, was full of dedicated and loyal people, but as an organization, they face many challenges around questions of morale and direction, thinking about performance. There were limited expectations, limited focus on customer needs, and a key piece, too, for me was that the IT review was not viewed by the staff as a useful document or as a learning tool. And that you know, it didn't square for me with some of our strategic vision principles, and these two I picked out. We have a principle that says we're dedicated to nurturing and developing the whole person, and yet I had a staff whose morale was quite low. And we have a principle that focuses on infrastructure and resources to support our mission. Again, this is not, you know, you need a strong central IT if you're going to do this. And from my successor at UCLA, one day on the phone, I heard about Angelo and Garnett's, and I thought, okay, maybe I need some help with my management team. So we got talking and pretty soon realized that organizational change was the real issue and the management team was just a piece of it. So we realized we kind of had a bigger project to do, and Linda and Nancy came along to help. And Nancy's going to talk a little bit now about the theoretical model. I can do this.
Thank you.
You're up.
So it's great to be here with all of you, and I just, we've had such a wonderful experience working with Harvey Mudd, with Joseph, and I also want to introduce Elizabeth Hodes, who's the manager of educational technology and media services, with whom we've worked as well and who's played an important part in the project. So did everybody see Elizabeth in my hand? And she may have things to pitch in as the day progresses here or the hour progresses. So the model that we use in Angelo and Garnett's and that we worked with Joseph and the staff around, and the whole staff may not be completely aware of the model, but it underlies all of the work that occurred in the consultation, is first, you've got four pieces that are in time sequence, they're chronological order, and then a set of activities that go on consistently across the change process. So let's deal with the sequence first. The first thing that we do is to lay the foundation for the change work. You can't just jump right in and expect people to be moving with you. So, you know, laying the foundation is key. And the most critical parts of that are making the case for change, and I'm sure many of you have written business cases and figured that out. There's also on the human side of change, figuring out what is the case for change that makes sense to that particular organization in this particular effort. What benefits are you anticipating? What are you working towards? Then assessing the change readiness of the people who are going to be involved. Have they had bad experiences with change efforts in the past? Are they leery, you know, full of trepidation, excited, interested? You know, what's going on with that? Then designing your change strategy and a plan that you'll carry out. And chartering your teams, the leaders, all the people who are going to work on it. So you get all of that in order. And then jump into creating the new, which involves, as many of you are undoubtedly familiar with, describing your current state very thoroughly. You know, that gives you a point of departure. It tells you where you are now, that you're moving from, and what you want to change. Then designing and building your desired future state. And this is at a very high level that I'm talking about this, because in different kinds of projects, this will mean something different and be fleshed out differently. But the basic concept is the same. So you get a real picture of where you're headed, what it'll look like, how it'll work, who will be doing what. And then you, you know, look at the gap between the two. What will it take to get from here to there? And you start to design all of the transition states and the pieces that need to be in place to get you from where you are now to where you're headed. Then once you've got this clear idea of what it'll look like and where you want to go and what it's going to take you to get there, you start to prepare the organization to take on that change with you. And this is where we find it's really important to create a fit between the organizational culture and the change effort you're doing. An organizational culture can subvert, torpedo, bring to a screeching halt a change effort. How many of you have been involved in change efforts that suboptimized somewhere along the way, where they realized less than was intended? A few of you have. It's very common that change efforts don't realize the full benefits that are intended, usually because of the human factor. I mean, there can be many things that contribute to that, but one important one is the human factor. We're complex. We're not completely rational. You know, you have to take that into consideration, and culture is a piece of that. So making sure that you get to some fit with the organizational culture, even as you might be changing the culture slightly. then preparing the people who will be implementing the change. That involves clearly training around, you know, any kind of work processes that may be changing, any new systems they need to use, that it also helps to orient people to the fact that things are changing, help them adapt to new roles and ways of picking up their roles and being engaged in the effort. When it comes to orienting the implementing the change, the pieces in which you're going to see implementation need to have been designed back in creating the new. But what the things that you'll look to see that have a vital role are your organizational structure. It may be the same as it was before. It may not be. You may be redefining how people report, what the roles are, how leadership, you know, where leadership is centered and how the work occurs, the work processes involved, the systems that are used, and, again, the people. So you want to make sure you're staffed properly, you have people with the competencies required to carry out their jobs in the new world order you're creating, and that they're ready to do that, they are ready to embrace it. The things that go along the way that are consistent from beginning to end, we call, they all fit under the rubric of fueling the change. So these give energy to your effort, they propel it, and they keep it in good order. First and foremost, we think it's important to engage your stakeholders and partners. And your stakeholders would be people who in some way will be affected by the outcomes, who have a vested interest in it. They may not be within your direct spheres of influence, and you're going to need to use influence skills to work with stakeholders, understand what are their needs and interests at the beginning and into the future, and how do you help them come along with you and help you with the effort. You can get them to actually participate in really meaningful ways to move it. Partners may be also stakeholders, but they'll be people who can actually do something to advance your work for you. And so you need to get really clear with them about what you need from them and what they expect from you and how you can do it together. So you do that all the way from beginning to end. Securing and sustaining organizational commitment is critical, especially those of you who are in large institutions may know this, that if there are competing agendas at work, you may be working on something, and if something comes from somewhere else that has more commitment behind it on the part of the institution, it can derail what you're doing or set it back time-wise. You need to know that you have the financial resources, the people resources, the mind share, the political commitment in your organization to carry your effort through from beginning to end. So creating sponsors at every level, from top all the way down to line supervisors, is really important. Getting those people aligned with the whole effort, knowing what they need to do concretely. What do I need to do to help you in my job? You want to be able to answer that and have everybody moving together in the same direction. Communication is critical from beginning to end, letting people know this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing it, this is what we expect to gain from it, this is what we need from you, this is how it'll impact you, and what do you need from us? So that you create also not just the telling, but a dialogue, and that you can sense all the way along, how are we doing with people? You know, are we losing people? Are there issues arising that we can't see because we have, you know, our own worldview and we may not see the whole picture? You just want to know that. Communicate all the way along. And then tracking progress all the way along. If you've created your change plan early on, you should, develop not masses of metrics, but a few really powerful, useful measures for yourself that you can use to track how are you doing along the way, so that you don't get to the end and then realize that you dropped something major out. This all being said, along the way there will be surprises, there will be unintended consequences to your actions that you'll need to take a look at, but this gives you a basic framework. The other thing, and I'll be fast here because we have a lot to say, is that this may sound obvious, but in the lived experience of bringing about change, it's often hard to know this, is that you're not going from now to your desired future all in one fell swoop. It takes lots of small steps along the way, so you're creating many, many transitions, and the vertical lines are transition states, and the space in between are transition states. So you'll be living from the beginning of the effort to the end. In the beginning, you're living more in the old world and a little bit in the new world, and as time goes on, more of the new world will be coming into fruition and less of the old world. This is a hard place for employees to live. Is when you're living in two worlds and things are changing, it can be very difficult for people. So it's important to not only be pretty deliberate and explicit about these transition states, but also to have thought through and be capable of helping people through those transition states so that they can live with the uncertainty of it. Yeah.
There's no timeline. What do you expect? Expect a timeline to institute change like this?
You know, it totally varies with what kind of change you're bringing about, and the order of magnitude. It varies hugely. So I'm afraid there's no simple answer.
Could you?
Yeah.
We'll take questions.
Okay. Yeah. If we could, we'll take questions at the end. But thank you for asking. That's an important one. And I will. Joseph will now talk with you about what really happened. How did it work?
And so slides can sound abstract and daunting, and as Nancy was speaking, I realized, you know, she used the phrase create a change plan, and plan means different things to different people. It could be an architectural blueprint, or it could be something on the back of a napkin, but just let me share with you one exercise that we did that I found very powerful and I continue to use. It was simply to sit and say, okay, Joseph, a year from now, we have our favorite beverage in front of us, and we're going to celebrate. We're going to toast, and we're going to say, thank God we did this, and I'm so happy this happened. And then I had just to complete the list of those things. And there, out of that list, I had my change plan, at least the bones of it. And I recommend the exercise. It's a really fun thing to do. And don't forget to celebrate at the end of the year with your favorite beverage. So the case for change, it did start with HMC's strategic vision principles. The new president was hearing from many that IT was not functional. She had used the IT review as a strategy. And we did have a mandate to get the central IT functional. That case was kind of coming from outside. From within, there was a sense of we do need to change. We have a kind of mandate coming at us. We want to get better. And so the seeds were there for a good change. And the first thing to do was to lay the foundation. And that's another metaphor, laying a foundation. Think of yourself as digging something. And one of the things that Linda and Nancy did was conduct confidential interviews with all of my staff and some of my stakeholders and used a method where they kept everything confidential unless three or more people had mentioned it and extracted themes, and then they brought that back to the group and gave me some recommendations. And just the other day, I was looking at my copy of the recommendations from over a year and a half ago, and scribbled in the margin beside one of them was, why the hell would I do that? And it was in my writing. And it was a recommendation to talk about the previous director and his departure. They discovered that was an issue, and there were strong feelings about it. And it would never have occurred to me to do that. So in May of 2009, we had a day-long retreat where the first half of the morning was about history and talking about the extent of the change. And I learned a lot about what I represented for people and the kind of change I was bringing, and things that didn't seem obvious to me that were changes were enormous changes for people. And it was hugely valuable to help us shift that rock a little bit. And by the afternoon, we got to a point where I was able to say to the group of staff, look, in return for what we will do as managers is provide you with clear direction. We'll give you constant, honest feedback. We'll give you training. And in return, I'd like you to support this direction that we're coming up with. Roll with the changes. We know there's going to be changes. We know there's going to be uncertainty. Can you roll with that, and can you support it? And we came up with a very simple set of a direction statement. This is the back of the napkin. It's motherhood and apple pie. And people said they could support it. And that was a day by at the end of it, we were able to say, look, we've just rounded the corner, and now we can see the mountain we have to climb. But there was a good sense in the room that we could do it. So we have a high-level plan with 9 boxes in it. I'm not going to take you through all of the boxes, but basically 3 are about identifying customer needs. And I know there's some sensitivity about calling students customers or calling faculty customers, but it's a useful name to use to distinguish between stakeholders, customers, and suppliers. And we went through a lot of exercise kind of clarifying what we meant by those words. Looking at the gap between what you do and what the needs are and figuring out, you know, what you can do, and then designing and delivering your services and tracking your performance. We'll put much more about this up on the site. I would have recognized a year and a half ago that it was important to keep track of change, but now I want to say it is really important to keep track of your change for kind of two big reasons. One is you need to know what's changing and how it's changing and the volume of change. So, because pacing is important, and some people will be out ahead running and some people are just keeping their heads above water, and for them that's a hard task. And the other reason is you want to celebrate every step that's a step forward in the direction you want to go, and so you've got to keep track and recognize and celebrate. So here are some of the dimensions we thought were important to track. I'm not going to take you through all of these. I'll pick out a few, and we'll talk about the early state and the now and future state in each case. So in the early state, our clients were telling us. They were uncertain about what would happen to requests. And you might say, where am I getting this information? IT review, focus groups, interviews, visits to departments, just chats in the street. It's all good data. There was a sense that if you knew the right person to go to with a problem, then you could get your problem fixed. But if you didn't know the right person to go to, you might not get an answer. And it would also unearth a good deal of evidence about what we call in general differential treatment. And that was everything from students being treated differently from faculty, staff being treated differently, people in power perceived to be powerful being treated in ways different from people who weren't in power, women being treated different than men, lots of little evidence of differential treatment. Our now and future state, we do have a ticket system to track requests. It's something around which we're building notions of issue management. Each ticket request is linked with a feedback survey. We don't get a lot of survey responses, and they're overwhelmingly positive and connected to our service vision. So we know that there's more work to be done in gathering feedback. People now think of the help desk as the first port of call, so we're helping to solve the problem of knowing who to go to. And we're working pretty hard on the unequal treatment situation, and as you can imagine, there are lots of complex pieces to that. Again, in the earlier state under client experience, people were perceiving CIS as not fully aware of needs and very much unsure of the direction, what was going to happen. We now do focus groups. I use the phrase honest feedback a lot. Tell faculty that, look, you give your students honest feedback when you give them grades and you teach them what to do. If you do the same with us, we'll learn as well. We have a clear IT strategy and set of initiatives. Again, that'll be on the website. I do monthly updates. We have what we call a Bite of Learning series, which Elizabeth leads and is a series of just talks about IT, everything from how to use clickers in your classroom to digital archaeology, and that gets people in the room and we gather feedback there. So structure and design of work. As it's by now clear, customer needs were not the primary organizational principle in the early state. We now do collect data about customer needs in order to help design the services. And that's a kind of a change thing. So you say, I'm collecting customer needs and information about customer needs. What am I going to do? It might involve changing your organization, changing the way you do work, saying to people, I know that you were hired to do X, but this is the job that needs to be done now, and we have evidence that it needs to be done now, so let's do it. The work was focused and organized around functional units. And we now allocate work across units to meet our priorities. So a really concrete example of something like that. So the AV unit, audiovisual, two people. And we have a series, speaker series every year called the Nelson Speaker Series. And, you know, some of the speakers are people like Jared Diamond. And someone like Jared Diamond is huge for a place as small as Harvey Mudd. We don't even have an auditorium big enough to accommodate the people. So we have overflow into other rooms and we stream it. And in the past, it was basically the two guys were expected to, they expected themselves and everybody else around them expected them to handle something like this. Last year, we changed the Nelson series. Elizabeth did really wonderful work in changing the way we handle it. And on the night of the first event, we had 8 staff out. We had duplicate of everything. We really, you know, changed the way we did things. And that meant, it did not mean that we're 6 new FTE in audiovisual. You can be sure about that. But it did mean that people who in the past had spent their time behind their desk working on something important, but not as important on that night as the Nelson series, were out in the hallways helping with AV. So some of that is about the task side of change, and I'd like to talk a little bit about the human side. As I mentioned, there was fear, sadness, anger about the departure of the previous director. And there was deep uncertainty. You know, will I lose my job was the question that was in the room for many people. And, you know, jokes tell a lot. And sometimes among CIOs, someone, I forget who it was, even said to me, well, you know, the thing is that when a new CIO arrives, maybe 20 to 40% of the people will be asked to leave. And, you know, if that's a joke for one person, it's a real fear for someone else. And going back to the principles, the strategic vision principles, nurture the whole person, I didn't think that was an option. It's not naturally an option I would choose, and it wasn't an option in the context of Harvey Mudd. I would say now the past is behind us. We work to make that happen. People understand what they need to do to succeed, and that's a daily task, is to keep people focused on what they need to do to succeed. And they understand under what conditions it's reasonable to ask someone to leave. Again, referring back to that retreat, part of the message was, here's what we will do, and here's what we're asking you to contribute, and over the space of the next year, let's see how we do, giving everybody a chance. Again, early stage, on the human side, was a real lack of agency. Stuff was happening to us. We don't have the resources, so we can't do the following things. And accountability, the word, and holding someone accountable, for many people conjured up the notion of punishment or blame, you know, a kind of sense of I'm going to be slammed up against the wall if something goes wrong, and somebody's going to be wagging a finger, and you know, where do these things come from? But they're in many people's heads. We now have much more agency. We explicitly practice a model where either groups or individuals would request from other groups or individuals, it was a request, counter-request, you know, can you do X? I can't do X, but I can do Y, and then a commitment to make that happen. So really explicitly practicing that in a staff meeting. And we try to practice open and appreciative inquiry into the gap. There is always going to be a gap between what you espouse, and in our case, what we espouse is our service vision, and what is reality is, you know, your daily delivery of your service vision. Yes? I've got 5 minutes. I'm going to go faster. This is a really interesting model. I'm going to really, very quickly, in terms of management actions, before state, typically, you know, loose level of control and setting direction, where that includes goal setting and training and very tight control on the details of the work. Do it this way, not that way. Use this projector, not that projector. and then loose on accountability. And what we want is a flip of that, where we're tight on goal setting, loose on how stuff gets done that allows people to be creative and encourages creativity, and tight on accountability. This is a model that I found very useful. It comes from studies of the Malcolm Baldrige Awards for Service Excellence. Okay, 5 minutes ago. So, service vision. This is a quick example from the client experience side of things. We did develop a service vision together. It'll be on the website. The details of the words for an audience like this aren't as important as the fact that we did it together and we agreed upon it, and we use it as one of the ways to design the questions for our feedback surveys. We do go out and get feedback. Again, we are exploring that gap. I have a set of slides that shows a guy jumping over a gap, and you know, you have two possibilities. You can respond with open inquiry, or you can get upset. Baron, you can make the faces. The managers are creating unit goals, tying them to the service vision. We really see the value of customer feedback. We now see it as liberating. And this is Elizabeth's word. It's liberating to ask for feedback if you get yourself out of the defensive mode and get yourself out of the sense that I have to do something about it right now. And two of our units are really delivering on this. Okay, so lessons learned and friendly advice. And this is advice to me from me to myself. And maybe you'll find it useful too. Communicate, communicate, communicate. Cannot emphasize that enough. You will need to adjust. I used to think that it was important to present the same consistent, rational persona to everyone I met. I now realize that that might not help me meet my goals always, and that it's important to meet people where they are and suit your style and efforts to the context. It is possible to achieve organizational change. 2 years ago, it was a task I didn't have a clue how to do, and now I feel like, okay, you can do something. It's important to help people come to terms with what's important to them. And sometimes people want to say, just get over it. Doesn't happen. Got to get your people engaged. Got to find the thing that will get people, get the blood flowing to their cortex and getting them being creative. I'll reference an article which was very helpful in that. It was about the effect on the brain of various kinds of teamwork. It's important to understand perspectives without trying to change them immediately. That's advice to myself. What is obvious to you may not be obvious to members of your staff. Can I tell one quick story? Second day at work, I share my calendar with all my staff. And I think nothing of it because that's what I always did. About 6 months later, one of them said to me, you know, Joseph, on your second day, you shared your calendar. That was revolutionary. And I'm going, you know, it had never occurred to me. And yet I did notice that everyone was coming up to me and saying, I see you're meeting with so-and-so. Can I tell him? And so it was really helpful. Find creative alternatives to letting people go. This is the, you know, find the right seat in the bus for the people. And when you do let people go, do your best to take care of them within your powers. And it's not just for them, but for the people who are staying and for the organization as a whole. Keep in mind there are things you don't know. Really, there are things you don't know, so you have to figure out ways to find them out. Do your utmost to get real data, where data is just information. Again, it could be a conversation, it could be the results of a Likert scale, it could be anything that gives you a bead on what's going on. Commit to the process. You know, sometimes, especially if you're a manager and trained to be a manager, you kind of think you know how things are going to turn out. You've got to open up that space where you're giving the process a chance to work. And the person who you really felt like wasn't going to make it turns out to be someone who really makes it. And, be prepared to be overwhelmed. Take care of yourself. More than once, I was reduced to tears during this process. And consultants can be your partners helping you to lead the change. On that note, let me ask the consultants if they have words of advice and lessons learned. I think they do.
Very briefly, what I'd like to do is tell you a little bit about what we thought were important thing advice. Thank you. For people who came in late, I'll leave it in the front chair here, but we gave people, you all have a handout of this advice as well as our model. So I'll be very brief, but it really has been an important partnership. And just to know from our perspective, you'll see there's some overlap. We've made these advices up separately. But if you got the bottom line, you know, you either manage change or change manages you is probably the message here. So there's no reason that you have to go through persistent suffering in your organization. There's things you can do about it, and you can make that change. That's the first message. Second message is, you know, set some direction. The clearer you can be on what you're aiming towards, you're aiming, you know, keeping your eye on the prize, making it a priority, will really matter to people as they're going through the various stages when they can still remember where they're heading. Third thing we really recommend is to capture the hearts and minds of the people and engage them, like Joseph said, and that often can be helpful with a compelling vision of what's going on and also how they can be involved. One of the most important things, if there's one we want to make sure you all hear, is how you lead does make a difference. And all the research shows that two of the things that are most important is a combination of humility and resolve. And what we mean by resolve clearly is to be persistent to do what you need to do. By humility, we mean you do not have to know everything you're going to do going into it. And you don't have to feel ashamed if you don't. Many people in your positions don't get trained on this or don't know it's not accustomed to leading in this way. That's fine. You'll learn that, as Joseph's saying he did in his own process. But stick with it, and also don't only direct. Make it a dialogue. Make sure you interact with people together. And just a few more pieces of advice. As Joseph showed you in his example, pay attention to the task and the human side. So you're making sure you're dealing with the systems and the processes, but also helping the people adjust to where you're taking them. And that often helps by creating a learning environment that encourages optimal discussion and experimentation without getting into any trouble. Get your people as aligned as possible so they understand where you're taking them and why, and help so you can move forward together and track the progress and celebrate all the milestones. And finally, we have the same bottom line, communicate, communicate, communicate. So that's what we wanted to say. We have some time. What we'd like to do is throw this back out to you to ask any more questions. When you hear the model, anything that you think from your own experience you want to share. And what I'll do is kind of facilitate that part, and ask questions to any of us or all of us will be happy to respond to what we said. So please.
What do you do when your organization wants to change, but they don't really want to be involved with it? Talk about it for management.
So the question is, what do you do when your organization wants change, needs change, but the people that really need to be involved, including the managers, are not very interested? I'll turn it over to my partner for all the hard questions.
Okay. I think that a place to start with that is to just let people know. I mean, there's a certain amount of education you're going to have to do all the way along. And usually when you have senior management leadership who don't want to be involved, they may not know what it takes to bring it about. And so having conversations which really have to say it won't happen without the involvement of senior leadership. And if you can't secure that early with them through the dialogue of, you know, we need your involvement, and get very precise about what you need from them, then you really probably won't have a successful effort. You know, it'll get undermined. So, you know, some people will call it a come-to-Jesus conversation. You may need to have conversations where you really deal very directly with hard issues with people at varying times in a project, and the very beginning is a key one to do that. That being said, designing, what do you need from the senior leadership? Is important to know going into it. So what are the things that they can do when they think, I don't want to get too involved, that means maybe they don't want to take a lot of time. So what is it you need from them? You need them to be visible and to be able to speak to the business case, their commitment to it, to allocate resources, and to track it along with you so that they know that you're accomplishing things, and then to intervene when things get off track or slow down too much. You know, and this is a longer conversation. Also, we'll be around if you want to talk more about any of these. But if you can define it for them, that will also help them early on to make it more manageable. This is really what we need from you. And the higher up, you know, the symbolic actions as well as the clearing the resources and setting priority are probably most important.
Great. Yes, please. Right there.
So in your case, some of the goals you set were to be more customer-focused and to collect data that supports whether that's happening. And I think those goals make a lot of sense. It's also my experience that doing those things, collecting that data and analyzing that data and responding to it is actually a time-consuming process. Mm-hmm. When you're devoting time to those things, then that means somebody is saying, well, I can't get this other thing done. And so I'm just wondering how you respond to that.
Do you want to repeat the question?
Okay,
so the question is, help me if I didn't get it right, but basically that it's time consuming to collect and analyze the data that it is feedback, and how do we respond to that when people don't want to be doing it? They want to be doing something else that they perceive as more important, right? Well, you do have to set your priorities, and yes, we certainly had that experience as well, and expressed in different ways. Like, you know, the cost of acquiring data is high, and at some point you have to drop what you're doing. Something I struggle with is just calling it data conjures up, especially for IT people, databases, big surveys, stuff like that. Often it's as much as sitting for an hour with the members of a department and putting yourself in a position where you're willing to listen and they're willing to tell you what they want. And I think once you get into it and you start seeing the value of feedback and the kind of direction it helps to give, if it's meaningful feedback, if it's the right measures, then you won't. That dies away. People stop saying, oh, I don't have time to do this. Similarly with planning, people often say, I don't have time to do this planning.
I think we all have something to add. So I'm going to add something. Nancy will add something. The other thing I was going to say is that's where we were talking about how important it is to keep in front of people the vision of where you're heading. And the reason you want to do that is if they can keep their eye on the prize, it may be easy for them to tolerate that it may take a little more time, particularly if it's been a period of time where they're really feeling the problematic stress of not meeting the customer's needs, not meeting really getting a lot of complaints, that they can be more convinced that getting this data could really serve them well in getting to the end goal. That's another thing that I would add to that, and Nancy has a third thing.
Also, just in terms of the process, there may be the first piece. I'll just give you the steps again in a slightly different way. First step would be developing a service vision. Second, gathering the data to understand the customer experience so that you see, you know, are you on target or are you off? Then third would be redesigning your service delivery model so that you're easy to do business with, so that it's easy for the people you're there to serve to get what they need from you. And then you prepare your staff to deliver that. So you either redesign roles, you train people differently, you change work processes, you do all that kind of work, and then you turn people loose to do that work and you give them more power down low so that they can actually make it work for the customer rather than having to go back up to get approvals for things. And then finally, you keep getting the feedback on how it's going. Eventually with the feedback, so it's intensive early on if it's a new thing and you're not accustomed to doing it and may take more time and money, but eventually it'll be like you don't just breathe by inhaling. You inhale and you exhale. And in serving people, it's you have to know that they actually got the service and that it worked for them is like the exhale. So, you know, the delivering the service might be the inhale. It becomes a natural thing over time. And CIS at Harvey Mudd is still in process because, it took a certain amount of time to come to terms with the past and help people get ready to move forward. And they've been moving along in some areas at a rapid clip and in others, going more a deep dive into developing things. So we're here just because of the timing, but if you talk to Joseph in another year, you'll also get a richer picture.
I saw one hand over here next. Okay.
Sorry, I was curious about whether you have to foster change in some of your customers, too, about how to relate to you, and especially in things like maybe planning ahead more so that you get the requests in a time so that you can deal with them.
So the question was about working with your customers to make sure they understand that some change is needed, perhaps by them. Was that a piece of the question? Well, yes. One thing I got lucky with, because I was new, and people were saying, well, what are you going to do? And I hit on the idea of saying, I'm going to be new for 2 years, so you give me 2 years, and I'm just here to help you make the change. So kind of laying the groundwork right from the very beginning is important. And then part of that 9-point plan was negotiating with the customer leaders. So we actually mapped out all of our customers. We came up with 6,000, and then we worked out who they were and who the stakeholders in each case were and who I needed to talk to. Because, yeah, some of the conversations might be, you know, we're both committed to excellence in Harvey Mudd. In order for us to achieve that, you need to do the following, and I'll work with you to make that happen. And if you do that, then we'll be able to do this. And kind of getting people as partners, this is a stakeholder engagement piece. Just no substitute for again going out and communicating with them. And you know, if you think the CIO job is about fixing the network, my experience and experience with other CIOs is that's not what it's about. You have to worry about that, but you can't be fixing it at the same time. You want to add something?
No, I think that's. I know we need to stop now. Do you have any final thing, Nance? Well, then we'd like to really thank you for coming and hearing us. I just wanted to let you know again, if you want the handouts, they're right in the front chair here, and we'll be here if you have any more questions you didn't get to ask during this presentation. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.